As the weather turns colder and we turn on the heat, the conversation over the supply of natural gas in this region is also heating up. Good evening. Welcome to And Another Thing. I'm Dara Kennedy. Maya Schrader is off this week. With more than 3.5 million customers, Eversource is New England's largest energy provider. On a Massachusetts stretch adjacent to Interstate 91, the company has proposed the Reliability Project, which is four possible routes for a $40 million, 5-mile-long natural gas pipeline that would run from Longmeadow to the south end of Springfield. The pipeline project faces opposition from multiple organizations and would travel through what's been designated as an environmental justice neighborhood. We'll get to that later in the show, but first, without this pipeline project, is the supply of natural gas to the area in jeopardy? Earlier today, we spoke with Eversource Gas President Bill Akeley. He tells us there's too big of a risk right now having tens of thousands of customers depending on gas delivered only through one aging pipeline.
You know, what you have here is a big customer base. The greater Springfield area, some 58,000 customers, and that includes hospitals, universities, commercial businesses, as well as residential customers, that has a single thread. So we look for areas to create redundancy so that a single failure, whether it's an old aged section pipe, and our greater Springfield area has lots of aged infrastructure, that risk is high, but you could have a third party hit, you could have a major storm event, you could have an issue at the Memorial Bridge, you can have lots of things. So the risk assessment, you know, highlights this as a high risk, especially with the size and expanse of the customer base served by this system.
All four of the proposed pipeline routes would begin at the meter station in Longmeadow and travel north into heavily trafficked streets. And then Massachusetts just has this new law that mandates reduced gas emissions. How do the two meet? How does your project happen, but then also emissions are reduced?
Yeah, the project itself is for safety reliability, right? It's addressing our customers and ensuring that their service is reliable and they still have access to affordable natural gas. The older infrastructure that we're talking about here is also being replaced at accelerated pace. This enables a lot of that to take place, provides some assurance that we can do it safely and reliably. And as we replace that old cast iron and unprotected steel infrastructure, we're obviously reducing leaks and have continued to reduce leaks in the area, methane leaks.
Yeah, the Massachusetts climate law, what's known as the net zero emissions by 2050. I guess the question is, how is Eversource working to do its part to meet that goal?
Yeah, I think in many ways. So we've set our own internal goal to be net zero by 2030. So looking at our own operations, and then we're obviously in every aspect. You know, when you look at greenhouse gas emissions and the challenge in the state and getting net zero by 2050 and the interim targets, we're actually working with many stakeholders. We're trying to figure out the best way, most effective way that's feasible, ensures safety, reliability of energy, and meets all the commitments that the state targets have established by legislations. And obviously, Eversource is involved with bringing on offshore wind, utilities have solar. We're trying to capture the biogas and address agricultural greenhouse gas emissions. So every, you know, aspect of the emission challenge, even transportation with electric vehicle charging infrastructure being built out by the company. So we're actively every day helping solve this problem and actively looking for, you know, the real critical things that need to happen to get from here to there, particularly around future natural gas.
When projects like this are proposed, what precautions or research is taken when you look into the safety of the project, right? It's going to go through a few different communities. In 2012, a natural gas explosion leveled a building in downtown Springfield. In 2018, a natural gas explosion led to the death of a person and the destruction of homes and businesses during pipeline construction. How can those incidents happen? And then now you want the community to support this project.
We have 100%, you know, day in and day out, 24/7 focus on safety of infrastructure. Our industry has the same focus. We've invested in our infrastructure, and a lot of our investments, like I mentioned, even with this project, are about safety and reliability of the system to ensure these events never happen new infrastructure going in the ground is built with the newest technology, the newest protections, and all the learnings that come from those events to assure its safety and reliability.
Opponents to this project state the fact that Springfield has among the highest asthma rates in the state and in the country, and these gas emissions exacerbate that. How do you handle the potential health risks in the community if this project goes through?
Yeah, the only thing I would say is, you know, the linkage between cooking with natural gas and asthma is a debated topic. There are many studies that say that there is no correlation. You know, obviously, above all, we are driving to reduce and eliminate emissions from our system, particularly leaks, and moving to a cleaner, decarbonized kind of product.
You have two virtual public meetings coming up next week. The question is, how open is open, right? Because opponents of this project that have said that they've sent over questions to Eversource, they wanted to get their voice out, have questions answered, but they've not gotten any responses, or the responses are very generic. Thank you for your email. We'll get back to you. Are these people going to be allowed to join these virtual meetings and ask questions about the project that's going to be in their community?
Yes, we want to hear and we want to respond responsibly to any and all questions about the project for the folks to understand the need for the project very clearly and also to have input into the routing and safety of the installation. So the open houses are intended to be, they're virtual, you know, due to the current constraints with the pandemic. They are open forums and folks will be able to answer questions. All this will be documented and there'll be more of this along the way.
We're speaking with Bill Akeley, Eversource President of Gas Operations. If you were to be at the open house, when you meet with the people in the community, what do you tell them is beneficial to them for this project to come and run the 5 miles that are proposed?
I think for us, it's making sure all these 58,000 customers recognize our focus on them and their needs and the importance of this project. And then us working with all the stakeholders. I mean, we recognize the challenge, we recognize the implications of constructing a 16-inch pipeline in these kind of areas and the concerns about safety. And we want to be able to make people feel very comfortable about this project and the need for it and the ability for us to do this safely and to be able to operate the system for a long, long time in a safe manner.
Bill Akeley is the Eversource President of Gas Operations. Thank you for joining us on And Another Thing.
Yes, and thank you very much.
The starting point for the four proposed routes of the Eversource pipeline project in western Massachusetts would be Longmeadow at a gas meter station proposed for that suburb. Since 2018, members of the Longmeadow Pipeline Awareness Group have opposed construction of that new gas meter station on Longmeadow Country Club property, as well as the Eversource pipeline that would run through the town into Springfield. Michelle Morantz is the chair of that resistance group. She tells us the project is costly, climate-changing, dangerous, and unhealthy.
We are very much concerned about ongoing climate change, so we're concerned about not expanding any fossil fuel infrastructure. On a more immediate basis, we're very much opposed to the pipeline and meter station because of health and safety reasons and its possible impact on a neighborhood which has been residential for years. And to industrialize a neighborhood like this is really pretty scary.
Eversource is committing lots of money to this project. Do you think that the money behind the project is what could possibly actually make this come to fruition?
The money behind the project is the major impetus, in our opinion, regarding why they're still pushing forward with this plan. It flies in the face of state law now, given the Next Generation Roadmap bill that was passed last session. They know that there's a tremendous amount of opposition to this. 2 years ago, we passed a town bylaw that bans the construction of any industrial gas facility and its connections in a Longmeadow residential zone. And yet, they persist.
We've just heard from Eversource that this project is necessary, but you've said that it's not true. Why does your organization believe that the project is not needed?
They say it's necessary because we need the reliability. how they define reliability has to do with the security of the line and maintaining pressure, et cetera. For the past 5 years, there's been no pressure problem in Longmeadow. Longmeadow actually is a community. 75% of the homes are already hooked up to gas. And in fact, Eversource has publicly stated this isn't a matter of supplying gas, it's a matter of ensuring that it travels through the lines, I guess. But we don't see that reliability issue is viable. And one of the issues that they've brought up is a big what if. What if a tornado this time around takes out the Memorial Bridge? Underneath the Memorial Bridge is a pipeline that supplies gas to Longmeadow and parts of Springfield. You know, what if a terrorist goes at that single source of gas? It would be a true disaster. Well, there's no doubt about that. We certainly aren't opposed to a backup plan in the event of some absolutely extraordinary disaster, but their solution is to create, to add to our gas distribution system a 200 PSI pipeline. That's a very high pressure pipeline that will run throughout our town, through Springfield, and then wind up going into this Bliss Street regulator station, which looks like an oversized dumpster by the side of Columbus Avenue. The only thing protecting that regulator station is a stand of shrubbery. So if they're talking about the threat of a tornado or a hurricane or a terrorist, I'm going to put my money on the Memorial Bridge, frankly.
Eversource does say that the project would address potential problems with that aging pipeline under the Memorial Bridge. So are you thinking that that's not true? Because it is an aging pipeline infrastructure.
Eversource spent millions of dollars beefing up the Con Ed line in West Springfield that feeds into the Memorial Bridge pipeline. And not once did they file any statement that that pipeline was leaking or in trouble. It's a mystery to us. They are mandated by state law to report leaks and problems with pipelines. Somehow, the Memorial Bridge pipeline didn't merit that kind of attention.
What would your organization like to see as an alternative to natural gas as a source of energy for the region, if not this project?
We're not about removing people's gas heat and gas cooktops from their home. I mean, that isn't the point. But we've always said that we need to move toward transition. It's a matter of working with energy companies to provide renewable or clean energy. In February of last year, a coalition of communities met with Bill Akeley and said, it is a fossilized fuel. It is an energy source from the past. We want to work with you to transition to clean energy, to electrify. Eversource is in a unique position because they're really two companies in one. There's Eversource Gas and there's Eversource Electric. And so they wouldn't lose money, really, by beefing up the electrical side. But there's been very little initiative on Eversource's side to demonstrate that they're serious about that transition. The state really needs to make it a lot easier for people who and communities who want to transition to actually make it happen. As Ed Markey said, we've got the technology. It's there. It's the political will that is missing.
There are two upcoming presentations by Eversource on this project. Is your group going to attend those? How are you preparing for the meetings?
We will be there. We are fully prepared to testify. The issue is whether or not our voices will be heard because Eversource is in control of those open houses. So I want to put quotation marks around the word open. How open will they be?
Michelle Morantz is the chair of the Longmeadow Pipeline Awareness Group. Thank you for joining us on And Another Thing.
Thank you, Dara.
You're listening to And Another Thing on New England Public Media. After the break, we learn why this project is considered by some as a social justice matter. Stay with us. Welcome back to And Another Thing. We're discussing the 5-mile natural gas pipeline that Eversource says is essential that it build between Longmeadow and Springfield. I'm Dara Kennedy. Maya Schrader is off this week. A group of environmental activists called the Springfield Climate Justice Coalition is taking action against this project and organizing on the steps of City Hall to speak out against the Eversource pipeline. They note that Springfield is considered a climate justice community by state environmental standards. With us now is one member of the coalition, Rusty Polesgrove. Thanks for joining us on And Another Thing. What is a social justice community, climate justice community, Rusty?
Hi, it's so nice to be here. So a climate justice community is a community that has been identified to be suffering from, you know, intersections of many issues that can be, a group of low-income people, a group of Black and brown people in a city that has, you know, a history of segregation, as Springfield does. And basically, these are frontline communities that are going to be affected the first and the worst by climate change.
So the justice community designation stems from a new climate law enacted earlier this year. How is an environmental justice neighborhood defined under that law?
Under that law, I can't speak completely specifically, but under that law, it is defined as a community that is affected by climate change and has historically been overlooked by policies that we've made to combat and mitigate climate change.
Why do you think this is a social justice issue?
I think that this is a social justice issue because Eversource is not being completely truthful with the people of Springfield, in my opinion. I think that, you know, they're saying that this is for reliability and redundancy. You know, as Michelle said, there's no issue with reliability. And in terms of redundancy, why would we build, you know, redundancy into a system that is closing businesses and hurting people when it fails? You know, I don't hear about solar panels exploding and shutting down people's businesses for months. You know, you look at the Chicopee Provision Company. They had a natural gas leak. You know, they've been closed since then. The people of Springfield can't afford that. The people of Springfield can barely afford to pay their rent each month. You know, if the gas goes out in their business, they're done.
Springfield is designated as one of these community justice communities. What's the benefit of being designated and having this term in Springfield?
The benefit that I see for us with this term is mostly it increases our visibility to people as, you know, a group that has been affected by climate change. You look at our asthma rates, that's got something to do with climate change and the amount of pollution that we've got. You know, you want to look at people's lack of access to healthcare, people's lack of access to fresh fruits, vegetables, you know, that is all part of being a climate justice community because you are disadvantaged due to the way that, you know, we're structuring the world to work.
Rusty Polesgrove with the Springfield Climate Justice Coalition. Thank you for joining us on And Another Thing.
Thank you.
We now turn to a follow-up to our show yesterday on city elections in the region. History was made throughout Massachusetts, and the night presented an upset in Westfield. However, one of the victors will be sworn in as a city's first ever Latino mayor. Then-candidate Garcia joined our show the day before the Holyoke election about how his message appeared to be connecting with voters.
Our message around responsible management and good governance was something that folks could connect with, whether you're left or right on the or center of the political spectrum. It's something that people understood. And, you know, I am homegrown. I'm a Holyoker. And I think also, too, the fact that I am Hispanic, what got us to win in the primaries, we did only focus in wards 1 and 2, which are the predominantly Hispanic parts of our city. That was the strategy. And when we were done with 1 and 2, we started chipping away in Ward 4. And if you look at the results, it was 1, 2, and 4 that got us past the finish line.
And why do you think that that was important to reach out to the Hispanic population, which is ever growing and becoming the dominant population in the region?
We always talk about the Hispanic population as big as it is. There's always a low voter turnout and trying to figure out ways of which we can bridge that political gap so that our process is inclusive. and that folks are part of our electoral process to select the city's next mayor. The strategy was to go down into those neighborhoods and connect with the people and make sure that people in wards 1 and 2 voted, come out and vote Garcia. You know, Holyoke is, you know, it's a very different city. We have different perspectives, color of skin, the language you speak, the culture, people you love. Every corner of our city is very different, and we get one mayor. And so my campaign has been very focused on being the campaign of which where, no matter where you are, or who you are, and what you represent, that you are somehow in some way connected and represented on my team as citizens of Holyoke, as Holyokers.
What are your immediate plans for Holyoke?
We have to hit the ground running, focused on stabilizing our local government, and we're hitting the ground running on the budget. We have to pump the brakes a little bit and focus on what's happening at City Hall, so that in fiscal year 23, we're able to then at that point focus on other matters, meeting with different businesses, with organizations and nonprofits and citizens, and trying to cultivate the pride and civic engagement our community needs.
The Holyoke Public Schools have been under receivership, state receivership, since 2015. What needs to happen under your leadership?
Well, I think the turning around is already going on. There are clear benchmarks that folks have been working on to get on the path to local control. I want to do what I can to be able to communicate that to the greater public so folks are informed and understand that we're moving in a positive direction and that we're on a path back to local control. There's also the Student Opportunity Act that was recently passed that's going to provide the adequate funding gateway cities like Holyoke needs so that our educators are able to better meet the needs of our students. And so working with our state delegation, as well as a receiver in our school board, and implementing those resources to provide the adequate support our educators need. The other important piece here too, I'd love to spend some time listening to our teachers, our educators, so that as the school board and myself work together with the receiver, implementing the strategies that we're including those concerns of our educators.
You say the office begins November 15th. Is your family ready for this?
Well, I sure hope so. It was my wife's idea. My wife says this is bigger than our family.
Joshua Garcia, thank you for joining us on And Another Thing.
Hey, thank you.
And thank you for joining us on And Another Thing today. You can also join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. You'll find us at AAT on NEPM. Also, check out the And Another Thing page on NEPM.org. Feel free to email us at andanotherthing@NEPM.org. I'm Derek Kennedy. Join us tomorrow for more And Another Thing. Have a good night.